Hello, Internet. I'm Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
We're back, baby. Scream Verdict.
I can't believe it. This is so exciting. Although I can believe it. I never doubted us.
Matt, live in the flesh. Like the olden days. I am missing the Scream Verdict interns.
Yeah.
Anyone in the LA area, let us know if you'd like to apply to be a Scream Verdict intern.
Yes, so we've got some very exciting news here at the Scream Verdict podcast.
Yeah.
For 2024, we're back on the air.
We're
How
here.
Exciting is this? So, apologies to everyone who has been waiting a long, cold winter of no Scream Verdict. Of no Scream Verdict podcasts.
We'll edit that out. Or not. It's all part of the Scream Verdict experience. Matt, it's good to have you here. You've been hitting the red carpet.
Oh my gosh.
Critics' Choice, Emmys, Golden Globes. It's all happening.
It's all happening. I met some of the Better Call Saul cast yesterday, which was a lot of fun. I was on a red carpet, spoke with some people from Yellow Jackets and Beef and all this sort of stuff. So lots of stuff happening in Hollywood, which was one of the reasons I've come, but the primary reason was to relaunch the Scream Verdict podcast with you.
Now, I don't know about you, Matt. The listeners might be thinking those are all well and good, but what I really want to know is, what did Matt and Jonathan think were the best film and TV of 2023?
Yes, and we haven't talked about anything from the past year from 2023, so I thought it'd be good to like just do a bit of a review by each picking our three favourite shows and our three favourite films, and we can talk a bit about those.
And I don't know your thoughts, Matt. We have refused to spoil any opinions.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what's on your list. You have no idea what's on my list.
Now, just a quick like thing with this, what we've done. I don't know if I've picked the three like best things or my like empirically three favourite things. It was more just three things I really liked that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Look, Barbenheimer was great. But yep. Barbenheimer was 6 months ago, and everybody's seen Barbie and Oppenheimer. Maybe some hidden gems out there that we might have wanted to include one or two of on our respective lists.
Yeah, I just don't want to get in trouble with the people. But that was one of your three favorite films of the year. Why is that sixth on your list or something?
If Christopher Nolan is currently working out on his stationary bike, his Peloton, and he's listening to this podcast, don't get offended if Oppenheimer's not included. It doesn't mean you weren't one of the best.
Yeah.
That was quite a good joke for anyone that saw the Peloton coach trainer drama involving Christopher Nolan. Did you?
No idea.
Yeah, Matt didn't give me a big enough a reaction, so I felt like I needed to explain the joke.
Some reference to something.
Christopher Nolan was doing a Peloton lesson, and the trainer said, while teaching the lesson, I guess just to pass the time, because there's a lot of cycling, there's a long classes. She's like, did anybody see that film, Tenet? Geez, that made no sense. Yeah, a lot of curse words in this little rant she did as well.
Wow.
That's 2.5 hours of my life I'll never get back.
Wow.
Imagine being Nolan. You're in her class, like digitally on his Peloton at home. It's like, great. I signed up to get a workout instead of get roasted by the Peloton trainer.
Oh,
and so
my
he
gosh.
Shared this in an award show, and the internet, as the internet is reliable to do, they tracked it down. They found the clip and it went viral of her roasting Tenet. Wow.
I know we're not here to talk about this, but and we'll move on quickly. But I feel like the past like 3 to 4 years has been a lot of Peloton stories. Like, is that just because Pelotons are becoming more popular?
I think it's just a pandemic thing. A lot of people got Pelotons during the pandemic. If you did, good for you. And just be careful. You never know who's listening, who's taking your class, or who might be listening to our podcast. So we'll try to be kind. Because we picked our three favourites instead of our three least favourites.
Yeah.
Let's get into them.
The other one might hate them. Yes. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay, so how are we going to do this? I think we should, like, a bit like a tennis match, go sort of back and forth, right? Like,
yes.
I think that would be fun.
Yes.
And that's what we're all about here, fun.
The Becker and Agassi of film and TV podcasts.
Yeah.
Matt, would you like to serve?
Okay, are we going to start with TV or film?
Let's start with film.
Okay.
We're talking about Nolan. We'll keep it rolling.
This is a film I really liked in 2023. Air.
Air, okay.
Air.
I know you've always been a Michael Jordan fan.
I love Michael Jordan. From Space Jam was what sort of was my the thing I liked Michael Jordan most in. And Nike shoes were the shoes to get. when you were a kid.
You got a pair of them somewhere in the room.
I've got two pairs of Nikes in the room. So, like, that was I remember I got my first pair of Nike sneakers. They're really cool. And this is the story about how, like, Michael Jordan made Nike famous, which, even though I was a fan of Michael Jordan and I love Nike sneakers, I think I was just, like off the cusp of knowing a time before Nike. Like, I wasn't there pre-Jordan blowing up Nikes, right?
Yeah, because this is set around maybe 86,
give or take. So, when I didn't realize how big a role Michael Jordan had in creating that brand. Mm. I just thought, oh, he's the number one sports guy. They're the number one shoe. Makes sense they'd go together. Match made in heaven.
You didn't realize there was 2 hours of story to it.
Yeah, exactly. And what I liked about this movie, it reminded me sort of like just an old school movie. Like, good cast, fun characters, good story, like, sort of the underdogs. It was like, you know, I just really liked it. I was finding it funny, enjoyable, just a great experience at the cinema. Did you see Air?
I did see Air at the cinema, and I get the sense, the feeling that you're going for, because we, especially us knowing how things pan out, we're like, Matt Damon's a genius. Like, how is everyone not on board with this?
Yeah.
And so seeing him sort of fight and win these arguments against people to get this shoe made. And they even sort of kind of touched on that in the film. I don't think this is much of a spoiler. Also, it's based on a true story. There's a person who he talks to, I think, pre-draft about Michael Jordan. He's like, ah, yeah, he seems all right. Probably not worthy of like that higher draft pick. And then he sees that same character at the end of the movie and he's like, always knew he was going to be a superstar.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody feels that way about, in retrospect, it was obvious he was going to be great and the shoes were going to be a massive success. But kind of seeing those characters overcome the hurdles for that actually to be the case, for that to become realized, was quite rewarding cinema experience.
There was some fun little like obviously Nike is shown in a very positive light. This is pretty much a tour ad for Nike shoes. But there are some funny things, like the owner of Nike or the creator or whatever, he was like, sort of with the slogan, just do it and stuff. He's like, how much little thought went into stuff like that is sort of amusing too. And Jason Bateman is great in it, pretty much just playing, like, if Michael Bluth worked for Nike, this is sort of like, he has a very similar demeanor and sort of thing, so that's fun.
It was surprisingly funny. Like, I wouldn't say it was the funniest movie of the year, but it definitely was enjoyable. And I think it's interesting, as you mentioned, 2023 kind of was the year of the product movie. We had Air, Barbie, Blackberry, the Beanie Baby movie, Tetris.
Yeah.
There's probably a couple more, I think Hot Cheetos got a movie or show or something.
Is that a joke, or did they?
No, I think they did.
Oh,
I didn't see an absurd thing
to add to the list.
And I think, without spoiling whether or not any of the other ones are on our list, I think Air was one of the more successful ones.
It was really good. What was one of yours?
Of that type?
No, of your top three films. Okay, we're done on Air.
Yes, very smooth. I'm glad I dropped the ball. Air. Yeah, it was good. I think you liked it slightly more than me, but I think it's a worthy pick.
Oh, do we give it a score? We used to do that on the podcast.
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Okay, let's go. Let's move on. Next film.
For my first film, I'm going to go with Poor Things.
Ah, I've seen it.
Nice. That helps. So I was quite excited to see this one. I'm a fan of Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, Mark Ruffalo, strong cast, and Yorgos Lanthimos. I had seen two of his films so far. I saw The Lobster, which I really liked, and The Favourite, which I also really, really liked. So the expectations were pretty high. And I went to see this at the theatre, and my goodness, what a theatre experience. This film is so weird, surreal, the ideas are nuts, visually it's nuts. It's very awkward and cringy. There's far, far too many uncomfortable sex scenes.
Yeah.
But it's kind of fun to see in a theater with other people just because of how uncomfortable the other 100 people in the theater are.
Yeah.
Which then means when there's a joke that breaks the tension, it just hits so hard because you can just feel the relief from every other person in the room that it's like, it's okay for us to breathe now, for us to laugh at this thing that seconds ago was making us feel very uncomfortable. So that roller coaster of emotion I really enjoyed. And I think it just, I think just everything about it worked. I liked the premise. I think thematically, this kind of journey, it's sort of like a weird modern take on the Frankenstein story in a way.
Yeah, can we say the premise?
I think someone being brought back to life is early enough in the movie. Essentially, someone is brought back to life and we see life through their eyes. And I like that perspective. And the lessons that the movie perhaps shows or offers us were not the necessarily the typical lessons you would think or expect from that kind of film. So I thought it stuck the landing on the thematic aspects as well. So just a unique, fun, entertaining experience, in my opinion.
Yeah, Poor Things. I started watching this movie and I thought it's a bit weird. Nothing wrong with weird. We like that, original filming, but there's so many like artsy camera shots and things, like, you know, there's bits black and white, bits color, like some, I don't know, like fish tank lens or whatever. I don't know, all these, all this stuff. And I'll be honest, watching it, I was like, they're doing too much. I'm so aware of the filmmaking, like, you know, that this is like trying to be arty and filmmaking. So it took my focus off the characters and the story a bit. However, as the story went on, I started to really be invested in the character.
I like it.
And I started following along. And I think I really found the ending delightful. And I was really, like, I felt very sort of strongly about how I wanted it to end. I found it, like, it wasn't necessarily what I was guessing or predicting, but I liked how it ended. And I think it actually ended up being a really lovely, charming film with great performances from the whole
ensemble. Mark Ruffalo is so funny.
He's funny, yeah. So this film won me over the course of the tournament. I was at an awards event the other day with one of the media groups behind Poor Things, and people was like, oh, what do you think of Poor Things? And I said, I'm going to be honest. First half hour, didn't know if I liked it. I was like, not sure about this. So trying a bit too much, maybe. But ended up winning me over. I think I just really got invested.
Interesting. I can see that, although I didn't experience it. For me, it wasn't style over substance. It was style and substance. I think that I knew that this was just such an ambitious director, that the approach, while very in your face, was all part of the experience. I liked the sort of like the set pieces, the camera techniques, the sort of storybook fairy tale aspects to part of it, as well as the story and the comedy. I think it was just kind of like kind of an artistic assault on the senses.
Okay.
And I definitely think it's going to be a love-hate experience. I think a lot of people think it's going to be too crude, too weird. But if you have at least just sort of a little bit of tolerance for that kind of thing, I say just let it wash over you and see how much of it sticks. And for me, 9 out of 10 sticks.
Yeah, a lot of sex in the film. Like, probably was
do
like,
not take your kids to this movie.
Yeah, like I there would be some people I would not recommend this to.
100%.
But it won me over. It won me over. I'd give it a 8 out of 10.
All right, solid. Matt, what's your second pick?
What did you give it out of 10? Or did you already say?
I delivered it in a moderately quippy line when I said 9 out of 10 sticks.
Okay. So, sorry. There you go. My next film, this is maybe a bit of a controversial one because it probably wouldn't, like, if we're doing our Screen Verdict Awards, it probably wouldn't make our Best Picture lineup, I'm guessing. But I saw this on the plane on my way over and I just had so much fun watching it. No Hard Feelings.
Yeah.
I like Jennifer Lawrence, so that's why I chose to watch it, like a rom-com with her. But the premise is a bit icky. I wasn't like wrapped in the premise. It's about these helicopter parents who put out an ad for someone to sort of date their son, and who's like, what, 18? He's about to go to college. Yeah, he's an adult. He's over 18, and sort of break him in. So get him out of his shell for college.
Yeah.
did not like this premise at all. But I do like Jennifer Lawrence and thought, oh, I'll watch it as on the plane. It was so funny. It was so endearing. Jennifer Lawrence is great in it, but the script is really clever and sweet, and I think they do it really well. Like, I just was really impressed with this. And the guy who plays the boy, he's fantastic.
Yes, too. I hadn't seen him before, but I thought he did a great job. I thought that a large part of that kind of film, like a rom-com, does rely on the comedic chemistry or the romantic chemistry. Surprise, surprise, a rom-com requires romance and or comedy. The chemistry between the two leads, and I think him and Jennifer Lawrence played off each other very well.
Yeah, Andrew Barr Feldman.
Yeah, watch out.
And it's a bit raunchy at times. People talked about it being like, the return of the R-rated comedy. R-rated
comedy is back.
But at the same time, there's restraint in the film. There's some really nice, sweet moments as well. Like, I definitely felt like it was elevated above what that sort of branding would have suggested. And it just reminded me, Jennifer Lawrence, she's one of the best actors going around. She can do comedy, she can do drama. Mm-hmm. She was in a film the year before called Causeway, which got a supporting actor nomination, so I watched it for that. And I was like, why didn't Jennifer Lawrence get nominated more for this? So it might say that she's one of my favourite actors. Maybe it says like...
And you were early on the Jennifer Lawrence train, because I think you saw Winter's Bone, didn't you?
Mm, before she got the nomination. Yeah. I saw that at the cinema. So that was... she's fantastic, and it's so funny. Matt Cormie
said, Jonathan, buy Jennifer Lawrence stock. I just watched this film called Winter's Bone. You won't believe it.
What's really cool, not about Jennifer, about this film, just some like laugh out loud, like I was laughing on the plane as like there's a scene where this kid, this boy, the guy she's dating, he goes, he thinks she's kidnapping him. And it's just so funny. I loved it. So I'll give it an 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Nice. So I have seen this film as well. I liked it. I was excited for it. I want to see the return of the rom-com, R-rated or not. I just want to go back to the theaters for a funny movie. And that's probably a longer conversation for another day. But basically, we love comedy here at Screen Verdict. Mm. I was excited to see it. And I thought the first half, roughly, was super duper funny. I thought they had some great dialogue, some great chemistry, some great set pieces. It's not super raunchy. Like, I know it was R-rated, but there's really only one or two scenes where you're like, okay, this for like maybe for what you might expect for Jennifer Lawrence. They're like, oh, they kind of went for it here. Mm. But overall, it's not too crazy. And then the second half, I found significantly less funny.
Mm.
But it was endearing. I feel like they hit on the character moments. I thought they told a sweet tale, and I still always cared about them and the outcome, but I just wasn't quite as entertained. So I think this was worth my time. I will give it I'll give it a 7.5.
Okay, nice. What's your next film?
So let's stick on the comedy train
Matt.
I had never heard of this film until Bonnie, my wife Bonnie, she said, oh, let's go see a film tonight. Let's go check out Theatre Camp.
Okay.
Theatre Camp. I was like, okay, I've never heard of this, but I'm down. Who's it got in it? It's got Jimmy Tatro. It's got the guy from Dear Evan Hansen. What's his name?
Evan Platt? No, Ben not Evan. Platt. Ben Platt. Ben Evan. Platt. Evan's the character plays in Evan Hansen.
There you go. It had a few familiar faces. I was like, I don't know, I think I'll go check it out. It is a mockumentary about a theatre camp. So we follow these people that are running this camp, sort of struggling to provide the funds for it. Not a lot of money in running camps for, I think they're middle schoolers perhaps. Mm. And then we see these kids come to the camp and try to prepare this musical. And it's a very simple premise. It's very down to earth, but it's one of the 10 funniest films I've ever seen.
Whoa!
Pretty much every single line hit for me. Whoa. Every character I thought had hilarious moments. Jimmy Tatro is just one of my favorite people. He's kind of like this kind, endearing, like wannabe in that world successful and helpful bro. But he's totally outside of that. Yeah. He's just kind of like this jock that doesn't understand that world.
Mm.
And I thought he was such a good sort of touch point for people that maybe weren't musical theatre people. Because
yeah.
what I thought was great about it, Bonnie, who totally has a background in musical theatre, is an amazing singer and performer. Me, had no interest in doing any kind of drama or singing. I can do some things, Matt.
Yeah.
Singing is not one of them. I'm a terrible, terrible singer.
I'm the same.
Complete opposite ends of the spectrum, and we both thought the film was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think if you are in that world, there'll be a lot of funny, recognizable, relatable things.
Yeah.
And if you're not, it does a great job of bringing you into it and making it seem fun and important, and you care about the characters and you laugh as well. It's got to be one of the most underrated things, because like nobody talks about this movie, and it's absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. What would you give it out of 10?
10.
10. Oh, whoa. I haven't seen it. I'll give it a 6. No. Scrap that. It's an NA for I can't give it a score. So that's cool. Maybe I'll check it out. I think I will check it out. That sounds awesome.
You got it.
You need an ensemble that works well for a film like that, I reckon. So the ensemble and just clicks.
It also has, sorry to cut you in, but just speaking about the cast, Ayo Edebiri, is that her name?
Well, she's from The Bear?
She's in The Bear and she's in Bottoms.
Wow.
Some of the funniest movies of the year and one of the most hyped TV shows of the year. So what a 2023 for
She Ayo. Is so... I don't know if The Bear's going to be on your list. Maybe it's on mine. But boy, she's so good in The Bear. Like she is my favourite on The Bear. The thing she can do with, like, without saying anything and that she's so new. Like, I love her. Love her. She's fantastic. So I will definitely check out that film.
Killing it.
Next one for me.
Number 3, Matt's still deciding.
Oh, man. I've got 2 down.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to go with Past Lives. Past Lives. I was tossing up, just for people who are curious, Oppenheimer was the other one I was tossing up between, which is great. Like, they're fantastic. But I feel like a lot of people are talking about Oppenheimer. Past Lives. There's these two kids who clearly, like, they're too young to really, like, date or, like...
They looked about 10 or 11 to me.
Yeah, so that sort of age. But you can tell they're, like, meant to be together. They're cute. These two, they're like, love each other and all that sort of stuff. But then she moves overseas. And they sort of lose contact.
They track it. So this about 10 or 12 years later, they reconnect through social media.
Yeah.
So I think originally it was like maybe in the 90s, then we're in the 2000s or 2010s, and then they kind of chat for a while, and then at some point they also get to meet in person many, many years later. So we kind of see their relationship at different points of different ages and different stages of their respective lives.
Yeah. So I think that's really fascinating to see these two people that have some level of connection, but are also not connected.
Yes.
And there's some interesting stuff. And eventually he comes to visit her, and I this is a mild spoiler or whatever. She's married.
Yes.
I just think, it's hard to talk about without mentioning that. And what I loved about this film is the restraint they used at various times. It's a slow story. You connect with the characters. And what I thought was a real strength was, dude, the husband was not a jerk. Like, you weren't like, this loser husband guy, what's she doing with him? He's a drop. Like, you know, like, he was a nice guy. Like, so I think that was like an interesting dynamic. And I think the actors really just knocked it out of the park, and it was just a lovely, quiet story about two people who were connected. And one of my favourite, well, maybe my favourite film is Lost in Translation.
I was just about to say that.
And it has Lost in Translation's vibes. I do not think it's as good as Lost in Translation. I think there's probably bits of this film that, like, lost my interest at times, and, like, maybe there's some strong parts and weaker parts of this film, but I just think it's such a lovely gem of a film, and I'll give it an 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. There you go. So, it's interesting. I think there is a similar quality to Lost in Translation, a film you famously like more than I do.
Yes.
Like, I think for me that was maybe, like, a 7 out of 10. For you, it's probably a 9 or a 10.
It'd be a 10 out of 10. It's my favourite film.
Yeah. I feel similarly about Past Lives. There's something that I can respect and appreciate and somewhat connected to, but I'm not maybe relating or having the same emotional impact on me that it did on you. However, I like this more than I expected to, in the sense that if based on the pitch, based on how people had described it, based on how present me would describe it to past me, I'd be like, that's very boring. There's maybe 20 minutes of plot in this movie. And yet I did think the performances were so strong. I did think some of the emotional connections formed were endearing enough for me to care, for it to hold my interest for most of the film. And there was a nice message to do with literally past lives, however you want to interpret that, whether it's sort of symbolic or, you know, an actual sort of belief. It just didn't seem quite as in depth as I wanted it to be. I think as someone that likes sci-fi, I think I wanted that to be explored a bit more, and for it to almost be more literally presented in the movie as a symbolic representation of our lives. Like, I think if the movie had, and this is not the story that they wanted to tell, obviously they shouldn't have literally done this, but just to appease me, if someone has a spare couple million dollars to make on a movie just for Jonathan to enjoy, I think they should have gone harder into that and made it almost like a bit of a sci-fantasy type element to do with past lives. But that's not the story they were telling, so I guess a 7 out of 10 from me.
Okay, great. Your last film. And again, by last, I don't mean they're in any particular order, but just the last one we're going to be talking about.
Yes. So I tossed up a couple of other big ones, like Barbie and Oppenheimer, that might deserve to be there. But one that I think might be interesting to talk about, and maybe not everybody has seen, Saltburn.
Oh, yes. I've seen it.
Saltburn. So this is the premise of a young man who goes to Oxford in England, prestigious university, and he's a little bit out of place. He's a little awkward. He doesn't seem to come from money. He doesn't quite have the popularity and status of some of the other kids, but he ends up making friends with this very cool guy. So Barry Keoghan plays the main character, Jacob Elordi is the cool guy, and he gets invited to his rich family's estate, which is called Saltburn. And it is a comedy, but it's a dark comedy, and it's kind of about, almost sort of like borderline horror at times, and it's about this person kind of becoming integrated into this family's life. And there's sort of questions as to the real motivations, what's going on with him, what's going on with the family. And it takes some pretty shocking twists and turns. Mm. And I was thoroughly entertained the whole time. I thought primarily it's a comedy, and I think it hit with the comedy. Thought the performances were amazing. Barry Keoghan, give him the Oscar now.
Wow.
And I thought it had some interesting things to say about class and some of the things thematically it hit. And it had a unique visual style as well. It had like an old, wealthy English feel with also some like modern, almost, this isn't the word I'm looking for, but sort of like hyperbolic artistic tendencies. Yeah. Saltburn, Matt, you've seen it.
I have seen it. I was, because you see a lot of movies these days that are just boring. Right? I won't name and shame anyone.
A lot of 30-minute dramedies.
Yeah, a lot of 30-minute dramedies, but also a lot of, like, you know, 2.5-hour-plus movies that you're like, boy, that was slow or boring.
Mm-hmm.
This was not boring. Yeah. I was intrigued. I was wanting to see what happened. I was... it had my attention, this film. I think by the wash, though, by the end of it, and Barry Keoghan's good, the cast is great, all that stuff, but by the end, by the wash, I was a bit, like, unconvinced it was great. I was sort of like, that's interesting. I'm not really sure where they landed it. And like, I'm not sure what the value was in this story. Definitely some cool, quirky things, some stuff that I liked, some stuff I didn't like, but I probably found this film a bit unconvincing by it didn't win me over the way Poor Things won me over.
Interesting.
Although ironically, Poor Things, I probably started a bit more like the first 30 minutes of Saltburn, I was more thinking, oh, this is good. Like, you know, this or maybe this could be good sort of thing. So I'm going to give this a 6 out of 10.
Ooh, rough. You got this one wrong, Matt. I think Poor Things is a good comparison. This is another one. Do not take the kids to see Saltburn. I think a lot of people have focus on a couple of the shocking scenes. They say, oh, it relied a bit too much on shock value. I think most of those scenes were pretty essential to the plot, to the characters. And I think, and one of those is won't say exactly what happens, but one of the kind of shocking scenes was actually improvised. Oh. So the fact that the premise that the film was nothing but shock value or relied on the shock value, I don't think that holds water. Yeah, I don't think it's...
so... although someone did hold water in the movie.
I liked it almost as much as Poor Things. For me, it's an 8.5.
Okay. I like it. Very cool. Well, now to the wonderful world of television.
By far... So here's the thing, as you find your first nominee, I have always... Well, I would say recently, probably since we've been doing Screen Verdict, I feel like I watch more TV than film. I feel like we've been in the golden age of TV with premium cable and streaming. This might be the first year where I've watched more movies than TV shows. I feel like good year for movies. Let's see how good a year it was for TV shows.
Well, if you're judging it by the best, the cream of the crop, it's pretty high.
Yes.
and I'm going to just start with what I think is hands down the best show of the past year, Succession.
There you go.
It's so good. It's such a good show. Such a great cast. If you've never heard of or seen Succession, it's about this business family in New York. I think loosely based off sort of the Murdochs, or not the plot points, but like the, I guess the sort of...
Just that type of family and status and the business.
The vibes inspired by the Murdochs. And it's, they're horrible, they're despicable, but there's this real power struggle. And it's like what really makes this show great is how funny it is. Mm-hmm. It's just so the dialogue, the situations, the jockeying, and it's like a really great show. And it finished fourth season.
Yes.
Was its last season.
A tight run.
Yeah. And it just ended so well. There were big plot twists. It was still funny. And it just had one of the great endings. Just a reminder, Better Call Saul's final season was from the year before, okay, which I do think was better than the Succession final season. I think this is one of the great dramas of all time that ended in form. Better Call Saul and Succession, but I'm talking now back to Succession. So can't say enough good things about that show. So good. Maybe I would have tweaked a few of the plot things at the very end, but I don't think that would have made it any better necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah, Succession, I feel like Succession has been a sort of a cultural event. I think people have connected with it. It's post-show great Twitter discussion. And I think that, obviously it's easy to say, and it's funny, and that helps. And I think that's true. But I think not only does it help, I think the show needed to be funny.
Yes.
Because it is very, it kind of reflects sort of the worst of modern society. Pretty much all of the characters are terrible.
Mm.
And I think if it was just played 100% seriously, even though it could still be cleverly done and would be a good show, it would just be a hard watch.
Mm.
There wouldn't really be anything to really root for, whereas making it funny gives us the permission to like some of the characters. Like we still know they're not good people, but it gives us the ability to be like, oh yeah, I wouldn't probably really want to be friends with them in the real world. I wouldn't want them to be CEO or president or put in any kind of position of power. But I like the character. I like watching them because they have a unique personality and they say a lot of outrageous things or clever things or funny things. So I think it succeeds almost pretty much as much as a comedy as it does as a drama.
Yes, I'd agree with that. I think there's a real through line between Veep, The White Lotus, and Succession. Different types of shows, and this you can point out differences, but they are all ensembles that are very unlikable but funny.
Yes, and there's sort of a scale from kind of like, and not the best guy, but like kind of funny to like, oh, this person is truly monstrous.
Yeah, I give it. I'm gonna say 9.5 out of 10. Like I'm tossing up between giving it a 10 out of 10, but then my head goes a bit like, oh, is it the best Succession season? But that sort of thing. I think Succession is a sort of 9.5 to 10 out of 10 drama series in whole. Fourth season, I'll give it 9.5 to.
Yeah, I feel like a little bit similar to how I felt about Breaking Bad. I think it is amazing. I think at any given time, any particular year, it might be the best show on TV. But I feel like some people are so high on it that when I say it's a 9 out of 10, that's a hot take.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many people that are just like, all four seasons are 10s.
Mm.
And I'm like, it's really good, but all four seasons, 10? I think it's a great show. I'm not going to say what happens in it, but there's a particular episode, I think around mid-season, which the response was unanimously like, oh, this is the best episode of TV. RIP any other show winning an Emmy this year.
Mm.
And to me, I just thought it was like another Succession episode. Like, it was great. But I didn't... Sometimes this show just hits those 10 out of 10, 11 out of 10 moments, which, you know, I'm not sure I think represents the whole show. But I love 9. Don't get mad about a 9.
Yeah. I think that episode you're talking about, I think, was a top 5 episode of Succession.
Okay.
But it wasn't even their greatest episode of all time. But, like, you know, like, great. Like, you know, a great episode. I loved it. I think maybe their best of the season. So.
Great show. Very memeable.
Very good. Was that one of your 3 shows?
I was kind of hoping you would pick it.
Strategy plays out. Okay.
Okay. I'm going to go with one that I don't think you've seen.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Based on a True Story.
Okay.
So this stars Kaley Cuoco and Christopher Messina. And they are a married couple. She is pregnant. He is a former tennis pro. Maybe could have gone to the big leagues, but he hurt his knee. And so they get... We've got a special guest. Who's at the door?
Come on in.
Scarlett Johansson.
Good get. It's my wife, Bonnie, who recommended we go see Theatre Camp, which we discussed earlier in the podcast.
Excellent.
Jonathan loved
it. 2 thumbs up. I was just about to describe Based on a True Story. Do you have any recollection? Yeah, Bonnie, it's not coming to mind.
No.
It's the True Crime podcast show.
Okay.
With Kaley Cuoco.
Oh, it was excellent.
Thumbs up. There you go. So there you go. Bonnie liked it. She's Charlie the Mini Poodle. I mean, she really likes any time we watch TV because she gets to cuddle with us on the couch.
Mm.
So that's kind of thumbs up all around so far based on a true story. So essentially, she loves true crime stuff. And lo and behold, they both get embroiled in a true crime.
Well, that's cool.
It's a very... I think the dialogue is great. The characters are great. I think it has... I don't think it's particularly serious. It's not... any major social commentary, but the things that it has to say about our society's obsession with murder and crime and how we monetize that and stuff, I think kind of plays into the storyline and in the comedy in a successful way. And it's one of only a handful of shows kind of like Succession that I think successfully balances the drama with the comedy.
Mm.
I think it's not written by the same people, but it also had Kaley Cuoco, the flight attendant.
Yeah.
I think if you like The Flight Attendant, it has a somewhat similar tone and sense of humor. So if you like that, maybe give Based on a True Story a try.
I like The Flight Attendant.
Yeah.
So what did you give it out of 10?
I'll give it an 8.
Okay. I can't give it a score because I haven't seen the show yet. Ready for my next review?
Hit me.
Very exciting. You have not seen this, I'm pretty sure. Though I'd love to be surprised. I'd love to be pleasantly surprised to you. Muppets Mayhem.
Matt.
Muppets Mayhem. So, I'll get the, because again, like, whether this would make my top 5 shows of the year, like, I think there's some, I think the stuff that works really well on this show is when it's focused on the Muppets. There's some human characters, and nothing against those particular actors playing them, but I think you're wanting to watch the Muppets, right? Like, that's what you're tuned into the Muppets show for.
So I think the Muppets.
There's any weaknesses to non-Muppets sort of storylines, and when they get their own BNC storylines. So, I love the Muppets. Anyone who knows me knows the Muppets are great. The original Muppet movie, one of the greatest movies of all time. They're just such a great... I love puppetry and Muppets, all that sort of stuff. There have been a few attempts to get them back on TV the past couple of years that have fallen flat. They've now come with Muppets Mayhem, which I think is a really interesting concept. Have you heard anything about the concept of this Muppet show?
I have not.
Okay, great. Well, on the Muppet show, their original TV series, there was a house band, like, you know, most variety shows have a house band, called the Electric Mayhem, with Dr. Teeth on the piano, Green Guy Gone on TV. Animal on the drums is probably the most famous band member of the Electric Mayhem. You've heard of Animal, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a show that is about the band, okay, the Electric Mayhem, and they're touring, but there's someone, a record label's about to, someone's about to lose their job, the record label, she wants to be a record producer. She finds out that they actually have the rights for the Muppets Mayhem's, the Muppet Mayhem, the Electric Mayhem album.
Gotcha.
Right? They got the rights to it. And she really wants to produce an album. And they signed this like in the 70s or something, like a long time ago, but they've never produced an album. So they're still contractually obligated to provide the album. They were given an advance at the time and all that sort of stuff. So she tracks them now.
Are the band currently playing at the start of the movie?
Yes, they're together. They're touring.
So it's not a getting the band back together. No,
it's not a getting a band.
The band is already together.
I think there is an... throughout the season, they do split up and they have to get them back together. That is part of the season one storyline. But anyway, so the whole show is them trying to put on an album. It's trying to get an album, write some songs, do a few covers, like trying to sort of figure that out. They're a bit dysfunctional. They're not the most motivated guys. They're sort of 70s, like, you know, bit that sort of stoner sort of like type vibe. So they're not always the most motivated. They sort of want to do things their own way. And it's just really funny. And I think it's good focusing on this band, which is a great band. They're probably the greatest band of all time, the Electric Mayhem. And it actually ended the season with they released a record, like, that you can buy.
A real record in the real world.
In the real world.
Is it good?
You can buy. I think it's pretty good. Like, it's, you know, the songs from the series. So I haven't actually listened to the album, but I watched the series. The music's pretty good. They're a great band. They're really good. So it was really fun. I really liked that they did not do a mockumentary style series. I feel like that's in vogue now. I want to do this. Like, so I think that was sort of refreshing. They were just like a sitcom. And there is one episode, though, where it's a bit of a spoof off that Beatles documentary. So, yeah, so the Peter Jackson documentary they made. And there's some great cameos. Well, one in particular, like, I can't believe they got them. Just such a fun, funny show. There's such a good characters. And, like, there's no other Muppets in it. Well, there's a few other puppet characters, but, like, it's just the Electric Mayhem. Kermit doesn't come in. Like, you don't have any... They're not relying on any of the other guys. It's the Electric Mayhem.
So if you've always been a fan of the Muppets, but you thought, you know, my favourite Muppets is Electric Mayhem. Could have done less with the other Muppets, make them the main characters.
I like it.
They made this show for you.
Oh, yeah. I love the Electric Mayhem. Dr. Teeth was my favourite character when I was a kid, so that was great. 8 out of 10.
Matt, I would say that in general, we have fairly similar tastes.
Yeah.
I would say that on maybe 75 to 80% of stuff, you and I are in the same ballpark. I think if you looked at the scores we've both given, other than Saltburn, I think we've been in the same ballpark.
Yeah, Past Lives maybe a bit.
I think I gave it a 7, you gave it an 8.
Oh, yeah. That's close.
That counts. Of things that we are not in the same ballpark in, on that spectrum, I think the Muppets might be the furthest that we have ever been apart. Because you said when years ago, early days of the podcast, the Jason Segel Muppets movie came out. Yeah. And Jonathan is like, Matt said to me, Jonathan, you can't watch Muppets, the new Muppets, without having any context for the Muppets. Yeah. You've at least got
to... too hard to follow. You won't be able to pick it up. Yeah, anyway, continue.
You've at least got to go back and watch the original. And so I think that I thought the new one was like, okay. I think you thought it was maybe fairly good, if I remember.
Yeah, it's like, it's all right.
The original Muppets movies is one of your favorites movies of all time.
Yeah.
We'll have to go back and dig up that podcast.
Yeah.
I think I gave it a 1 or a 2.
Oh my gosh.
I
rewatched it this year. It's held up. It's just as good.
I can't remember what it was, but unfortunately for me, it wasn't just the jokes weren't landing, I found them to be actively unfunny. I'm not a Muppets person. You could have given this a 10 out of 10, and I still would not watch it.
Okay.
It's a shame. Is Jim Henson still alive?
No.
Jim Henson Jr., if you're listening to the podcast, my apologies. It's you're beloved around the world, just not by me.
I think it's Brian Henson.
Brian,
is his son. Okay, so... hit us up with one of your shows then.
Okay, Matt. Something that
possibly be better than Muppets Mayhem?
Something that I think you've seen. I hope we're in alignment on this one. I'm going to call it a cultural event, which is amazing considering it streamed on a service I had never heard of before. The freebie hit of the summer, Jury Duty.
I've seen it.
Matt's seen it.
That's it.
So if you haven't seen Jury Duty, here is the premise. People apply to be part of a documentary about what it is like to be on a jury.
Mm.
So it seems like a very sort of boring, mundane, maybe this is for PBS or something, and we're going to learn just a little bit more about what it's like to be a juror, what the sort of modern judicial system is like.
Yeah, you'll be on the jury in a real case, and like, so you obviously still have to make it onto the jury either, but yeah.
And one of the people in that applies for that gets selected.
Mm.
Everybody else in this supposed TV show is an actor. All of the other jurors are actors. The judge is an actor.
The bailiff, defendant, the bailiff, yeah,
the lawyers. All of this is a setup. Now, it seems a little bit mean because it's sort of a prank show in a way, but it's done in a very clever way in that all of the weird things that happen around them, all of the funny things that happen around them are for comedy, but we are supposed to laugh at the characters and not at him. So the main character is called Ronald. And what they actually try to do is shape Ronald into being the hero of this story.
Yeah.
Now, if Ronald had turned out to be a bit of an odd guy, a selfish guy or something, it could turn out into something else. And I'll let you watch it and make your own decision. But I think for the most part, we're rooting for Ronald.
He's a nice guy, I'll say. I think, yeah.
It's kind of like a Truman Show type thing, if you're looking for another comparison. And one of the things that made this show a hit was James Marsden, the actor, who you might recognize from X-Men.
Yeah.
And one of the other things he references. Anyway, he plays
Sonic
himself.
The Hedgehog.
Sonic the Hedgehog. So he is, like, he plays himself. So because he would be too recognizable just to be a quote-unquote actor as one of the jurors. And so seeing James Marsden play a sort of, like, Larry David version of James Marsden in this fake thing, like as a very just sort of spoiled, self-involved, arrogant actor, but kind of befriends Ronald and tries to get to him to help him with some of the auditions and stuff. The journey that friendship, that relationship goes on is just one of the most interesting and unique things I've ever seen on television. It's weird, it's unique, it's heartfelt, it's funny. It's on Freevee, apparently. Watch it. Watch Jury Duty.
Yeah, for Australian listeners, I think it's on Amazon Prime. What works about this show is it's almost if they didn't even have the premise that makes the show so unique and interesting, you just think this is a good sitcom.
Yes.
Like, it's a good story, great scenes, it's funny, it's well written. Like, you know, if you didn't tell someone the premise, they'd just think that's a good comedy. Which I think's the real thing that makes it a great show, is because it's, like, in some ways it does lean on that premise, but it doesn't need that premise even for it to be funny and stuff. So I think it makes it funnier knowing that, but I still think it's just a quality, written, plotted, great characters, great story, great everything. So I think it's great. I think the cast is unreal. I think they were robbed to not win the best Emmy for casting just because The Bear won, which is a great cast show as well, but I just think to even put aside picking Ronald, which would have been difficult, and the great casting choice of James Marsden, which was good, everyone else had to be a great comedic actor, but also subtle enough to make it believable, but also not someone that you would have recognised from anything before. So
it kind of walks this brilliant line where there's obviously some scenarios which they create ahead of time, which is very clever and well written. But these characters, they have to be in character. These actors have to be in character for some, like, you know, 12, 14 like hours at a time, because you're on a jury, they get sequestered. So a lot of it is improv. So the amount of talent that it requires to be, like, it has to be really grounded, right? Not just kind of like, oh, kind of grounded comedic acting, like really grounded, because you're genuinely trying to, trick's not really the word I want to use, but trick another human into thinking that you're actually a juror on this case, but while still providing enough comedy for it to be an entertaining TV show.
Yeah.
Just a remarkable sort of commitment from those performers.
I give it an 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. I don't think I could have been on it, because I actually recognized two of the actors. we're too deep into the comedy world, maybe, to get cast on that show. But great show. I'm going to give it a 9.
Okay, great. My last show, I am going to go with... Oh, I should have done this one after your... based on a true story one. I've blown the segues and stuff now.
You can edit it?
Only Murders in the Building.
Okay.
I don't necessarily think season 3 was their best season, but I love this show. Like, we both love murder mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
I love a comedy murder mystery, and it was just really funny. Meryl Streep joined the cast. I think she joined in a really cool way. Like, I think, like, she enhanced the story and was a good character without it being all of, like, the Meryl Streep show. I just love these... Martin Short, Steve Martin, Selena Gomez, they work so well together, those three, and just fun every year to see them solve a murder. And this was actually season 3. First season, I didn't really predict the murderer. So,
yeah,
I was wrong about the murderer this season, I think. Season 2, I was pretty good. I called it sort of, you know, like about around the halfway mark of the series. Season 1, I sort of got it, but then... changed my mind at the end of the second last episode and was wrong on that change. But like for most of the season, I said, but this one I wasn't like sort of top of my list. So yeah. Great. 8 out of 10.
I don't think I'm historically great at guessing who the murderer is while watching a show or movie. Mm. Partially because even though thoughts will pop into my head, I do like to try and be present. I almost kind of don't want to spoil the outcome for myself. You're not on some
Excel spreadsheet punching in data, like trying. Yeah,
I'm not mid-season on the Reddit forums discussing theories. I will do that maybe after a series is finished to kind of debrief afterwards. But in the moment, I just kind of like to watch and enjoy. However, my one sort of claim to fame in this regard, Flight Attendant Season 2, which I thought was good. I think I slightly preferred Season 1. I guessed who the murderer was, or whoever, kind of the main thing that we're trying to solve in season 2, literally within 1 second of meeting them because of a clue in episode 1.
Which show is this, sorry?
Flight Attendant season 2.
Okay, yeah.
So, normally not the best guesser, but that one I think I got literally as quick as humanly possible.
Well done.
So maybe it was too obvious. Either I'm a genius or it's too obvious. let me know if you watched Flight Attendant Season 2.
I can't even remember now who the murderer was for Flight Attendant Season 2, so I can't. Okay, so continue.
I am rambling about a different show for a while, because I haven't seen Only Murders.
Oh, okay.
I did watch the pilot, kind of. I'll be honest, I was mostly doing chess puzzles on my phone. Is that a reflection of me or the show? I'm going to say the show. I'm not a phone person. I really don't like looking at my phone while watching TV.
So charming. Steve Martin, and like, he's on TV. Anyway.
I'm going to say something very condescending here, Matt, and feel free to push back. I feel like you're such a big fan of Steve Martin, and to a degree, maybe to an almost similar degree, Martin Short, that
I'm not a huge Martin Short fan.
Interesting. All right, just Steve Martin.
Like, I like him, but like,
it's not Steve Martin on the same level for you. I feel like you would have liked it, even if the show sucked, just because I feel like you have, like, a reverence.
Mm. But it's, I don't think I've loved everything Steve Martin's been in. But, yeah, maybe I've got a soft spot for Steve Martin and Jennifer Lawrence and the Muppets.
I'll give it another chance. I didn't really give it a fair chance.
It's really good.
I wasn't enjoying it, but I'll give it a second episode.
It's a comedy murder mystery.
I found it more corny than funny, I think.
Okay. Okay, last one.
Last one.
Hit us up.
You know, I would like to pick one that we both watched, but you've already done Succession. So
no, I'm gonna say I haven't watched.
I'm gonna do one that you haven't watched, and that is The Other Two. So
which other two?
The
we're only gonna pick one.
Yes, well done.
My avatar. My avatar cost 5 pounds.
Who's on first?
Yeah, okay, go. The Other Two. It's a comedy. I've heard of it.
I believe it was originally on Comedy Central, but then got picked up by HBO Max, which is now just Max. Mm-hmm. It is a show about a brother and sister who are just kind of living sort of normal lives. One of them is trying to become an actor. One of them, I believe, is trying to become a manager. And they are referred to or thought of as the other two because their younger brother sort of overnight becomes a pop sensation. A music video of his goes viral and he becomes sort of like a young Justin Bieber type. And so these two, they're kind of older, perhaps more accomplished, have put more time into their careers, are just sort of like the side pieces to the dramatic change in this family's lifestyle because of the success of that. And it's a unique perspective because normally when you are watching a show about something kind of extraordinary, that's the character that you follow. So it is kind of interesting to be like, well, what's it like to be the family members of this person?
To be the other two.
Yes. Molly Shannon is the mum and she's also very, very funny. And it's an interesting sort of premise-based show, but the characters are so good. Drew Tarver, who I've seen at UCB a lot, absolutely hilarious. Arguably the main character. His sister Brooke, I'm forgetting the actress's name, but she's phenomenal too. They're not the. It's funny because how they in a way they'd like to be the heroes, but there's pretty clear reasons why they're not the heroes. And so that's I think that's ripe for comedy. And over time, it becomes more character based and less premise based. And season three, I think, was a little bit hit or miss than season one and two, but I appreciated how ambitious it was. Mm. It made some huge stylistic choices, some very sort of surreal, absurd story ideas, visually much more unique and ambitious than you would think for a sitcom. Season three kind of felt like, oh, we're going to get cancelled, or this is our last season. Let's just go as crazy as we possibly can. Yeah. And not everything hit, but I sort of appreciate sort of the avant-garde approach to a sitcom that was already sort of had a well-established, successful thing from the first two seasons. 8 out of 10.
So much easier, though. What's the thing that you told me, like, theatre camp? It's so much easier to check that out than, like, a show that's, like, had 3 seasons already.
Ken Marino's in it.
Yeah, maybe I'll check it out. Maybe I'll watch it. Wanda Sykes
is in it too.
They're nominated for an episode at the Emmys for writing or directing or something. Maybe I'll watch that episode.
If it's one of the weird ones, it probably deserves a directing nomination, but is maybe not representative of the 3 seasons as a whole. But
okay,
check it out.
Well, there you go. Each had 3 movie and TV show recommendations, which turned out well. Now. Just quick housekeeping. Open the doors. We got some housekeeping. I think our intention, we haven't talked a whole lot about this and logistics, but our intention
Spoiler alert.
No, it's not a spoiler about anything.
I just wanted to get in the sound bites before the end of the episode.
I think, we haven't talked a lot about logistics stuff, but I think our intention is to do more podcasts, right?
That's always the intention.
So, and I think this works. I think what's been hard about us doing a podcast is you're in LA, I'm in Sydney, both living busy lives. We then also got to make sure we've seen the same movie, the same TV show. So maybe it's better to do like a
batch of reviews.
Regular just check-in. Let's share a few things we've been watching together like we have today. If there's ever another Barbenheimer, that's something we could both do because we'd probably both go see that. But I think that might be the way to make sure we get some more content out.
Maybe if I'd had someone to talk to about Barbenheimer as a way to sort of get out my energy and excitement for Barbenheimer, I wouldn't have had to buy a Barbenheimer t-shirt that ended up being way too big and the print quality was terrible.
Oh, no.
It's very blurry. Pixelated Barbenheimer t-shirt.
So it's just
should we do a giveaway? Clearly, I don't want this. Yeah. Maybe someone will. If you live in the LA area and you're willing to swing by, free Barbenheimer shirt.
There you go. There you go. First in best dress. Yeah, okay. Very good. And yeah, just a pleasure to be back on the air with you, Jonathan. And thanks everyone listening to us back in the saddle. If this is your first Screen Verdict podcast, you can go into the archives and listen to some ones from years ago.
Yeah, there's like 200 episodes or something.
Yeah, it's a lot. So there you go. Goodbye.
See you.